Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle. Because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the Bacon Cheese Slider, 1921 Bacon Cheese Slider, or Chicken Bacon Ranch Slider. And also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 Bacon Bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
Stay connected this winter with this unbeatable deal from Breezeline. Get reliable, fiber-powered internet for just $19.99 per month with all-in pricing for 2 years. But that's not all. Your first month is on us. This deal gets better with a free modem and installation, along with free Wi-Fi your way whole home coverage. Safeguard your network from cyber threats and keep all your devices connected and secured with this amazing offer. Act now. Terms and conditions apply. Offer expires March 3rd, 2024. Learn more at breezeline.com.
And now,
it's time for
Inside Conan, an important Hollywood podcast.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello, listeners.
Welcome back to Inside Conan, an important Hollywood podcast.
Welcome back. And my name's Mike Sweeney, writer with Conan.
I'm Jesse Gaskell, and I'm also a writer with Conan.
What a coincidence.
We wrote on The Conan Show. Some of us wrote on Late Night with Conan O'Brien and The Tonight Show with Conan O'Brien.
Yeah.
And now we just write emails for him to send to his family. Right.
And live in the past, apparently. Yeah, man. Let's talk about what I did 20 years ago. Well, if you're into that, you're in the right place.
Yeah, I think that's the only content that exists now.
Yeah, that's right. How are you?
I'm good.
Yes.
I have news about a new business in my neighborhood.
Oh.
Which I always like to share with you.
Should we say the name of the neighborhood?
Yeah, it's Highland Park.
We're in Los Angeles.
Los Angeles.
Yes.
And I was really excited to tell you about the vegan butcher shop that opened. That
right.
I thought would be closed by now, but it's thriving.
I thought that was, well, you made it sound like it was due to go belly up the second it opened. But it's thriving.
But no, there's lines out the door.
That's crazy.
Of like very soft looking vegans.
Now, is the staff laughing while they serve these people?
Like, I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah. I think everyone's into it.
Everyone's taking
it seriously. It's
serious.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
But I saw a new sign was up.
Yeah.
Just this morning when I was walking my dog. And there's a new eatery in town.
Yes.
Very, just a block away from the vegan butcher.
Yes.
And this one is equally, this one blows my mind as well.
It shouldn't be successful.
It shouldn't be successful.
Therefore,
it's extremely specific. And the name of it is Wavy Gravy.
Oh.
And it is a poutine restaurant.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Poutine, and which I kind of think is almost like the neighborhood was having to give equal time. Like
that is,
the vegan restaurant had to have its polar opposite move
that
in,
is
which is
the exact polar opposite.
Poutine.
Same owners. That's the weird part. This guy's really
covering
his or her bases.
Hedging his bets.
Poutine. Everyone knows what poutine is, right?
Yeah,
even though I didn't learn until a few years ago.
Fries covered with gravy and
meat.
And it's a Canadian national food.
Yes.
It just seems so specific to me. I
isn't there cheese
imagine.
Involved? Or
oh, yeah, there's definitely.
I don't know.
Non-vegan.
Oh, well,
food.
That sounds great.
There's beeswax on it. I don't know.
So are they going to, maybe the vegan butcher will offer vegan poutine?
Vegan poutine, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah.
That they're going to have to compete.
Do they add like animal squealing noises coming from the back of the store
butcher.
Just to give it some authenticity?
Some realism?
Yeah,
they should.
Oh, this is exciting to hear how the poutine's. That does sound.
It's just incomprehensible to me. I can't imagine. I mean, this neighborhood has, like I said, there's a vegan butcher. There's three like independent stationery stores.
Right. Wait, what?
There's a lot of dispensaries, and then now there's a poutine shop. But there's nowhere to get a sandwich. You can't
right.
You can't just get a sandwich.
But you can send an apology card saying, I'm sorry, we don't have a sandwich shop here in Highland Park.
Yes, exactly.
Three stationery stores. I like
three.
That.
Yeah, on
those
the same
are the
block.
People writing thank you notes.
On the same block.
That's and Billie Eilish lives in your neighborhood, I learned.
That's right.
She grew up there or she lives there now?
She grew up there and she lived there up until very recently.
Okay.
Because I had, did I tell you about how I was seeing, there were patrol cars just two blocks away from my house.
Yeah.
And every day on my walks, I would see these like four corners of this one intersection had each one had an unmarked patrol car.
The cops are waiting for the poutine shop to open. Or they love
Canadian
they
cops.
Love vegan meats. Yeah, so
so I thought there was some kind of drug bust happening.
Going
like,
down.
Oh, they've got to be staking out some major drug house.
Right.
And then I found out that, no, it's Billie Eilish's house. And her address was revealed in the documentary that she did.
Oh.
And so, you know, now there's crazy people going and just wanting to...
Oh, she has all these stalkers trying
to... Yeah, just trying to get in.
Wow.
And do God knows what. But yeah, so she's got 24-hour security. I think that she ended up having to move because of weirdos coming by her house. But her parents still live there, which is really cool.
Is that weird if you're a fan of someone and you just want to go by?
Just want to stop by and
let them know that you're really, really into them.
That you'll die
is that
without
a problem?
Them.
I don't see a problem with that. That you'll die without them. And why not go out together?
Yeah, but when Conan had Billie Eilish on his podcast
recently,
her parents came in and I was like, oh, yeah, I think I've seen them around the neighborhood.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Did you recognize them?
Mm-hmm. Her dad has a beard.
Yes, I saw him. Yeah.
They're very down to earth. They're cool.
It was fun to watch on the monitors because towards the end, she was just kind of scrunched up in her chair.
I know. She was like horizontal.
Kicking back. She was horizontal.
In the chair, yeah.
But she totally relaxed, like kind of like, oh, this has become a safe space for me.
You know?
And that's when Conan
she was
pounced.
Under the covers.
Right.
It was fun. And I think she even mentions in the podcast that she moved away recently from her parents' house. So she lived with her parents up until really recently.
So you listened to the podcast. I watched. I just look for her body language. That's how I tell whether a podcast is going well or not. And right now,
how's this one going?
You seem very tense. No, you're always relaxed.
Well, hey, yeah, let's talk about our podcast. Enough about Conan's podcast.
Ugh, please.
And we have our own Billy this week.
Yes.
Billy Eichner is on the show.
Yes. We were very excited to have Billy on because he's been a real friend of the show.
He has from way back.
Yes.
In his early days of doing Billy on the Street.
And speaking of early days of Billy Eichner, I didn't know that appearing on Conan was one of his first appearances on late night television.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That
yeah,
was cool.
I know. I think he was just kind of, Billy on the Street was like an internet sensation.
Right.
And was on True TV,
yes,
I believe.
And there might have been one network in between.
There was another Fuse, maybe?
Yes, Fuse.
I forget.
So you know it's going to be dicey and explosive. Billy on the Street, I feel like just when that exploded, it was such a great melding of his energy and the streets of New York.
Well, and it was a fun advance of late night comedy too,
right.
Like man on the street comedy, and he was doing it in a even weirder way that
no one
had ever seen before.
Yeah, it was really great. And you know, I think we can just talk about Billy and not even have him on with our incredible
insights.
That's
right. Wouldn't you rather just listen to us talk about our
interview
with Billy
while ordering in some vegan meats?
No, but since we're doing this season of Inside Conan is Conan on the Road. So we thought we had to have Billy Eichner on to talk about when he crashed the Super Bowl with the Conan crew.
Yes.
He and Conan producer Frank Smiley also went all the way to Israel to chase Madonna. And then famously, Conan went on Grindr with Billy Eichner's help in a very funny remote.
Yes. So Billy's the perfect fit for this season's theme of Conan on the go because we sent Billy on the go.
Conan on the road.
Conan on the go. Conan on the road. I don't know. What's the outside Conan? A inside,
outside
Hollywood.
Conan.
Unimportant.
Maybe I...
Van Nuys podcast. I don't know where I work.
So here's Billy. Well, so Billy Eichner, welcome to Inside Conan.
Thank you.
You have appeared on Conan. I read...
12 times, which I think is maybe up there with the most that anyone has.
Wow. I can't. Yeah, that sounds right, though. I mean, it sounds like a lot, but thinking back, it's been over 10 years.
Yeah.
Conan was the first major talk show to have me on as a guest on the couch.
Oh, great.
Oh wow.
This was about, this was January 2012.
Right.
Wow.
Which is crazy. I didn't even put that together until right now.
Yes.
Let's do this again for the 20th.
Oh God. But yeah, it was 10 years ago. And Billy on the Street had just become a TV show. We were 3 or 4 weeks into our first season on a rather obscure cable network. So no one knew that it was on.
Except for our booking team.
That's right.
Yeah, exactly.
It was on True TV, so, right? Which technically is...
It started on a cable network called Fuse.
Oh.
Yes. And the first 3 seasons were on Fuse. And then we moved to True TV for seasons 4 and 5. Okay.
So you moved up to True TV.
Can you imagine? Can you imagine? You know you're in trouble.
Yeah. But they're like, well, you're starting here at True, right? No, I'm moving up from somewhere else.
No, we were at a smaller place.
How did they, because was it literally like your show debuted and they saw it and were like, oh, we've got to get you on? Or had they already, were you already on their radar from your stuff, clips that have been on YouTube?
I would imagine, yeah, I'd had some viral Billy on the Street videos on YouTube before it became a TV series, and they would go very viral on Twitter, and Andy Richter, the wonderful Andy Richter, was an early Billy on the Street fan.
Oh.
And I think that's how I got onto the Team Coco radar initially. Mm-hmm. And I have a vivid memory, because I was very hands-on with the editing of all Billy on the Street things. We have wonderful editors, but I would work with them side by side. And we were in post-production on one of our first season episodes. I remember this so clearly, at a post-production house here in LA. And I remember getting the email from the show's publicist saying that they booked me on Conan, and I could not believe it. I was so excited.
Oh, that's great. I love that you remember where you were.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yes. I should give Andy Cohen a shout out, because technically I was on his show a week before, but that's like a different type of thing. And I love Andy's show and I've done it a million times, but I grew up with Conan and, you know, that was a real sort of old school, legit late night talk show with the desk and the couch and the monologue and all.
Also,
that.
Did Andy Cohen call you to do a 10th anniversary? No.
No, he didn't. Nope. No, he didn't.
He called to do the ball drop at Times Square.
Sneak him some booze.
They're like, we need yet another gay.
We need a triumvirate.
CNN requires it. So anyway, but yeah, it was such a huge moment for me to do Conan, and that was amazing.
And we want to talk about when you first went on there, but you just said something that really interested me. I love that you were very hands-on in the editing of Billy on the Street. Because it does, like, the way you cut from one thing to the other is so, to me, specific. And I think specific to you.
Yeah, it has so much adrenaline. It feels like Billy is editing it.
It does feel like you're editing it on the street as you're going. So I love that you kind of had the final say about how any of that would go out.
The editing is so... There had been a handful of times over the years leading up to the TV show Billy on the Street when TV producers working on some late night show or some pilot would call me and say, hey, we want to do a Billy on the Street video for our show. And they wouldn't let me edit it because they had their own editors. And who was I at the time? I was no one. And just happy to get a gig and try to get on TV. So I would go and shoot it. And I would let other people edit it. And then I'd sit and watch what they made and I would just kick myself.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know? And so when it came to the show, I insisted on being a part of the editing because I always had been with any of my videos that had gone viral. And it just felt like it was just part of the, as part of the process as anything else.
No, I was going to say, Billy, you mentioned doing Billy on the Street with other entities, which you did end up doing for Conan. So after shortly, I think after you appeared as a guest on the couch, you went to the Super Bowl to interview people about the Madonna halftime show.
Yes.
And that was really, really funny. I mean, and then there was a there's a whole Madonna series that you did for Conan.
Yeah.
But it'd be nice to hear a little of how that, I mean, were you approached by people at Conan to do that?
Yeah. And that remains one of my favorite things I've ever done, going to this, that Super Bowl segment about Madonna. And what was smart about everyone at Conan is that not only did they ask me to do it, which I was like so flattered and did not see it coming at all, but they let me edit it.
That's great.
And they, I think that's why
Frank Smiley
who was a longtime Conan producer, he went to the Super Bowl with me. He was a producer on all of those segments. We ended up going to Israel together, me and Frank Smiley, to cover the opening night of the Madonna tour in Tel Aviv.
I think Frank was just figuring out ways to go to things he wanted to do.
Like, cool.
I want to go to the Wailing Wall. I want to go to the halftime show.
Yes. You haven't lived until you've been with me and Frank Smiley and an all Israeli crew in Jerusalem.
He said it was a mostly female crew in Jerusalem.
Interesting. Yeah.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. They were fantastic. Yeah. And then when we shot in New York, the final of the Madonna trilogy videos were in New York at Yankee Stadium, and it's me and Madonna together.
Yeah, you met her. Unbelievable.
On stage at Yankee Stadium. And for that, Team Coco and Frank let me use my New York Billy on the Street crew.
Oh, that's great.
To shoot it.
Cool.
Because I said, you know, they really know how to do this better than anyone. And so that was very cool. And so, but for the Super Bowl, that was really incredible. I had done Conan as a guest once, and I sort of came on and people didn't really know who I was. And I was ranting and raving and crazy. And people either thought it was like the funniest thing or the craziest thing or... And a few days later, I got a call saying, hey, do you want to go do a Billy on the Street style video for us at the Super Bowl? It's in Indianapolis this year. And this was 2012, 10 years ago. And they said, we have crazy access to the Super Bowl. It's like they give us amazing press passes. We can literally get onto the field.
I'm kind of stunned that we had that.
Well, they were lying.
Yeah.
they were just trying to get us to go. Okay, I'll go.
Yeah, they're like, we'll scalp tickets once we're there.
No, but they did. We were on the field. You were. Like it was wild. I don't know how they did that. They even got me. I mean, there was a lot that was cut out of the video. I went to all the press conferences. Oh, wow. I went to, they have that stupid, like a Super Bowl weekend. They have like the Celebrity Bowl where they get like all kind of random celebrities to play football with some former NFL players. So this was cut out of the video. I can't remember why. Maybe it just didn't read or something, but I went to that Celebrity Bowl like the day before the Super Bowl. And I didn't play because they asked me to play and I was like, absolutely. But I said also, also calling me a celebrity, even now, but especially then.
I love that you corrected them on that. Guys, please, not yet.
But I didn't do that, but I did. I watched it, and we had a crew there, and Peyton Manning played in the game, a very serious man who I obviously didn't know. And again, no one knew me at the time, which was actually great.
Yeah.
Because I could just pretend I was a real sports journalist and then get in there and start asking them whatever crazy pop culture stuff. I think I asked Peyton Manning, have you ever had gay sex? I'm not sure. I honestly, I think that I did. I wish we could talk to Frank and get there.
We will talk to Frank.
And find out what he answered.
That's what I want to know.
I went up to Peyton Manning. I asked him, it was essentially what I did the next day at the Super Bowl, which was, how was the game? Any thoughts, any predictions? Are you excited about Madonna? And then I think I asked him, maybe this is just in my head, some weird homoerotic fantasy. Yes. But I think I asked Peyton Manning if he's ever had consent.
And then he said, not yet.
I don't think for any of it, he said a word to me. He was stone-faced and did not say anything, which is probably why we didn't.
He was waiting for SNL. Exactly.
He was waiting for someone bigger. Yeah. He's like, where's Dane Cook? Get me Dane Cook.
How this impact all my endorsements.
Seriously. And so, and look, I don't blame him. Frank said, you want to go to the Super Bowl? Mm-hmm. It's in Indianapolis. We have crazy access. And of course, you know, at the time, I had just done Conan for the first time. My show had just premiered, but no one really knew it was there. And I was working so hard on it. And I thought, oh my God, Conan, the Super Bowl, this is the biggest thing ever. I have to say yes to this. And I said yes and pretended like, oh, yeah, this is a great idea. What a natural fit for me, knowing that I know nothing about football. And I mean, of course, I watch the Super Bowl like everyone, but I watch it as like a cultural event to tweet about, not as a sports fan. And I got off the phone with Frank and I thought, oh, shit, what the fuck am I going to do at the Super Bowl? Like, this is all... like a lot of straight dudes, like really intense sports fans from all over the country. What am I going to ask them? You know, this is the opposite of what I do. And then I was like, huh, I wonder who the halftime show is this year, because that's the most pop culture oriented part of the Super Bowl. And thank God it was Madonna. And I am a massive, obsessive Madonna fan since I was a kid.
Madonna was your bar mitzvah theme
it wasn't exact. People like to say that it wasn't exactly that, but she did factor into my bar mitzvah. Pop music was the theme of my bar mitzvah, but Madonna was my number one. And there was a kind of life-size spray painted portrait of her in the cone bra and everything. Amazing. Like in a garter belt and cone bra. I was, you know, it's like a birthday party for a 12-year-old boy turning into a 13-year-old.
I hope you still have that.
I want you to turn the camera around and it's there in your living room.
I don't. Yes, I don't have it here. It's part of my Peyton Manning fantasy.
Now it's Peyton Manning in the cone bra.
I do. Yes, exactly. Which these days would be great for him and for everyone. But I don't have the full Madonna, but I have the head and I have one of the hands.
Okay.
It's in storage. It's like, it's made out of like what they used to call like foam core. But it's spray painted and has glitter on it. I mean, by the way, I was ahead of my time. This is 1991. Okay. So, gay kids were not coming out of the closet at 12 years old. So, you know, this was very progressive for my parents and for everyone involved. Anyway, I'm a massive Madonna fan. Mm-hmm. So when I saw that Madonna was the halftime show, I thought, okay, my in. I'm going to run around asking all of these intense Super Bowl fans only about Madonna. Like, not going to even touch the game at all. Now, that kind of evolved to, I'll start with asking about the game and then transition into asking about Madonna, and that's where I'll get really passionate and worked up about it. And I pitched that to Frank. He loved it. It made a lot of sense for me.
I mean, that's the whole remote, and it's so perfect.
And it was so perfect, and it was crazy. We were in Super Bowl Village for 3 days, and it's in Indianapolis, which is, you know, a major city, but it's not New York City like I'm used to. So I was a little worried, like, will there be enough people and what will the energy be like? Because I really feed off of that. But Super Bowl Village, no matter where the game is, they basically turn it into New York City. Yeah. I mean, it's crazy. There are so many people and everyone's so excited to be there.
And were people good being on camera? Like, they came and were comfortable with the cameras being there? And
yeah, well, I would, for a lot of them, I would ease them into it. Like, I'd be like, hey, guys, like, hey, bro, you excited about the big game? And they'd be like, yeah. And then I'd be like, you excited about Madonna? And then, like, you know, a lot of them would get mad at me.
They'd get mad.
One guy I remember called her, like, was like, she's an old hag. And I was like, you're old. And I, like, get mad at him.
I know. I kind of was shocked that somebody would call Madonna an old hag. I was like, how dare you?
And this, by the way, this was 10 years ago. And then we did end up having crazy access where on the day of the Super Bowl, me and Frank and
Jason Chalemi was the producer. Yeah.
Jason.
Right.
Yeah. Roey was there behind the A-cam, which is the camera I'm mostly talking to. And I remember, so we're on the field. And for the first quarter, I was like, this is insane because it's the Super Bowl. I've never been to an NFL game. And now I'm on the field at the Super Bowl with all of these journalists. And it's like the biggest entertainment event of the year. And I remember thinking, oh, it was lit for TV, the game. It was lit for entertainment. It was lit for a TV show. It wasn't really lit for the people watching in the stands because of course not, because it's the billion people at home who are watching. So everything is produced for TV. And that was an interesting moment because I always thought like, oh, this is like the ultimate sporting event, which it is, but it's really pop culture also. Mm-hmm. This is entertainment. This is lit for entertainment. It's like Vegas. You know, it was that. Yeah,
everyone's had hair and makeup, even the players.
Exactly. The cheer. Yeah. I remember I went up to the cheerleaders and asked them if they had any COVID.
But you're right. The vibe there is the teams are almost secondary.
Honestly, it felt like Dancing with the Stars on steroids in helmets. Really, that's what
it felt
like.
There's confetti that comes out at the end. Yeah. Yes.
Exactly. It felt like a pageant. Mm-hmm. It felt like a pageant. It wasn't that different than when I go see the Radio City Christmas Spectacular. Yes. Like, really, it was. I found that to be fascinating. And then, but I kind of had to, you know, I had to stay in character. I couldn't get overwhelmed by being at the Super Bowl. Like, I had to sort of stay focused on being Billy on the street, who doesn't really give a fuck about the Super Bowl and is just there to see Madonna. And it was so cool because for the Madonna halftime show, we were literally on the 50-yard line. And that was a real challenge because I'm a real Madonna fan. I mean, I've seen, so part of me was like, holy shit.
I got to get in the mosh pit.
At the Madonna halftime show and I want to watch it as a fan, but the camera's on me waiting for me to comment as Billy on the street. And I was like, oh shit, I can't like fully enjoy this as a fan. I'm here to work.
Yeah.
Right?
You wanted to take your shirt off and get in the mosh pit.
That was the spirit underneath.
Take the shirt off, get camera makeup on your chest, and then run into the mosh pit.
Exactly. And I remember thinking, they announced her. They were like, ladies and gentlemen, Madonna. And like, I'm like freaking out, both genuinely and performatively.
It's nice when those two correlate.
It's very rare, but yes. And I'm freaking out, but I was clearly way more excited than a lot of other people there.
Including Madonna.
It wasn't. Yeah. It wasn't a Madonna crowd, obviously. Though I think her halftime show ended up being the most watched one of all time.
It's one of the ones I remember the most of every halftime show.
It was a true spectacle, and it was great. It was really fun, and Nicki Minaj was there, and CeeLo. Mm-hmm. She had all these guests, and that was fun. And then at the end of the game, the Giants win. That was also a crazy thing for me, because even though I'm not the biggest NFL fan in the world, the Giants are my home team. I'm a New Yorker. You know, when I did care about football a little bit and watch football with my dad when I was younger, we cared about the Giants, So it was wild that of all years, it was like Madonna and the Giants and they won. And I was like literally like standing right near the end zone when the Giants scored a touchdown. It was really wild. And then at the end of the game, the Giants win and I'm standing like offsides, like, you know, and just, you know, looking at the camera being like, oh my God, the Giants won. Madonna was amazing. And everyone's freaking out about the Giants and there's confetti and people are crying and fireworks. And I'm screaming about Madonna into the camera. And all of a sudden people start, you know, walking onto the field. family members of the foot, you know, everyone who works for the teams or running onto the field, other journalists with cameras and, you know, NBC News and all the, you know, it's this freaking Super Bowl, right? And I knew in my head that I needed to just go for it and work up the guts. I was like, you literally can run across the Super Bowl field right now screaming about Madonna. And in my mind, I was like, you have to do it. But I was scared. I was
wondering whether you were that get nervous with something like that.
I knew it. I knew for comedic purposes, it needed to happen, that I would never get this chance again. It was Madonna, like my number one, like it just needed to happen, but it was scary. And then I start kind of running onto the field slowly, and Roey, like, who's behind the camera, but he kind of like looks at me and he gives me a nod, right? And I remember this so vividly. And he's like, basically telling me, he was like, go for it.
Yeah.
Do your thing, you know? And that's, and
we'll,
I was so,
you,
to this day, like, so appreciative of that. Like, I needed that little kind of pep talk in a way. And then I like took off and like ran right to center field, like in the middle of where all the players are and all the NFL execs, and it's confetti, and I'm screaming like, "Boom, motherfuckers!" And like, just, and I'm like, Madonna was amazing.
And you ran up to two players and you're like, "What'd you think of Madonna?" And they had just won. Finished the game. So great.
Two New York Giants who had just won the game. They're like these huge dudes. It's like massive athletes who just won the Super Bowl. And these grown men are crying, and their wives are there, and their kids, and all these people. And I run up to them and I was like, "Hey, man, great game. Congratulations." And one of them spoke to me like very genuinely and was like, "Yeah, we played really hard. And like, you know, halftime, we like, you know, we recalibrated and blah, blah, blah." And I was like, "And did you see Madonna?" He just looked at me like, "What?" He was like, "No, I was in the locker room."
No, we don't
I
watch
he just
it.
Gave you, he felt a little room. Sheepish about it. Like, I was supposed to watch it.
And I did that with a couple of the players. And to this day, that, I don't, even for me, I don't know where that
is. So ballsy. I
well,
know.
Also, I know Frank Smiley absolutely was probably like, "You got to run across that field."
Yeah.
Because he loves
and I'm glad.
Being transgressive.
It was amazing. And you know, I certainly wasn't looking to like disrespect the players in any way, but there was part of me that was like, you know, I'm certainly the biggest Madonna fan at the Super Bowl right now. Like, these are all jocks and sports fans. And I am going to be the voice of like, you know, gay Madonna fans and make her the priority, which especially for, I don't know how sort of transgressive or progressive it would seem right now. It would still probably seem a little shocking, but things were very different 10 years ago than they are right now in many ways. And especially in terms of like gay comedians and a gay sensibility, being able to sort of be front and center like that, especially on a show like Conan. It's not for a gay network. It's not Andy Cohen. It's a more mainstream thing, just for smart comedy fans. And I, so I was glad that I did
such a simple, you know? Great comedy idea to be the one person that's, you know what I mean? And then the way it was just you running across that field, because you're so used to seeing that after every Super Bowl. And now it's you doing it, and it's all about the halftime show. It's just, I think that's why it's so crazily memorable.
Yeah, it's so joyful too.
Oh, and Frank said, he gave a fun detail. He said, you know, you had a handler, I guess, a Super Bowl handler. And he said that the guy was like, you know, "You could stand in the end zone when the game's over, but you can't run out on the field. That's the one rule." And then you guys just took off. Yeah.
I was like, bye.
I don't remember that.
Yeah.
I don't even remember that. Maybe that actually explains why, another reason why.
Well, I was yes, of course. But, and you then he's, I was like, "Well, did you get shit about it afterwards?" He said, "No." Like, you know, it's all, who is even keeping track once the game's over and there's 300 other people trying to shoot comedy remotes on the field.
I did go up to this didn't make it in because he clearly wasn't having it. But Spike Lee, of course, was on the field.
Okay.
When the Giants won. And so of course I see Spike Lee. And of course, I mean, he's a genius. Yeah. I have a lot of respect for Spike Lee, of course, but I was like, Billy on the Street's not going to be afraid of Spike Lee. So I went right up to Spike Lee. And I actually, from what I remember, like Madonna's work with Spike Lee, I know everything about Madonna, like obscure things. She had like a cameo in his movie Girl 6. So I was like, I bet Spike Lee. They're like hugely famous people, but also like kind of legit New York artists and all of that. And so I thought Spike Lee must like Madonna, like in my head. So when I was going up to the players, I saw Spike Lee. So I go up to Spike Lee and I'm like, Spike Lee, what'd you think of Madonna? Wasn't Madonna amazing? Thinking he would probably even understand that I'm joking.
Right. You know?
Because he's a great filmmaker. And he looked at me and he was so angry. And he just looked at me and said, the Giants just won the Super Bowl. What the fuck are you asking me about Madonna for?
Okay.
And that's Spike Lee. Like, I was like, oh, shit. Okay. And that, I got a little scared and I backed away from that.
Hang out with the more cuddly players.
The players were just having such a joyful moment. I didn't really faze them.
I love you said, like, well, Billy on the Streets would have no problem running up to Spike Lee. Like, I love that he's a kind of a persona. He's alter ego.
Like, there's a difference for you between the character and Billy Eichner.
Definitely. Yeah. But then the hardest thing, the biggest example of that was when, so then we go to Israel because the Super Bowl video, people really liked that
and
video.
And this was just a few months later.
You guys called again and said, what if we...
Frank wants to take another trip.
Yeah, exactly. Basically that.
Right.
Frank doesn't want to work. So... So Frank's like, Madonna's opening her tour in Israel, in Tel Aviv. Mm-hmm. Should we go to Israel? And I said, are you insane? I said, we're going to go to Israel. I'm a Jew, but I've never been to Israel.
Oh,
but I said, what? Are you kidding? We're going to go to Israel for a 2-minute comedy bit?
Yes.
Those were the days, let me tell you.
Yeah.
And we did. And at that point, what happened was Madonna's whole team, manager, publicist, everyone, they had all seen the Super Bowl video. And Madonna was out promoting her new album at the time. And so they loved it.
Oh, great.
Right? They loved it. And they all reached out to me telling me how much they loved it and that Madonna had seen it. And from that moment on, her publicist said, like, before the end of the year, I am getting you in a video with Madonna. She literally said, like, over my dead body, will Madonna not be in a video?
That's unbelievable.
Classic publicist.
I follow Madonna like a hawk for decades. She doesn't do those things.
Yeah.
Like, it's very rare. But Madonna does have a really good sense of humor. And she likes a particular type of comedy. So it made sense. Madonna was one of the first famous Americans to talk about Sacha Baron Cohen.
Wow.
And if you remember, Sacha plays Ali G in Madonna's music video.
Oh.
That's before Americans really knew who he was.
Wow.
Before he had his Ali G show on HBO here. And she'd been living in the UK, of course. And so she was familiar. And she was a very early adopter of Ricky Gervais. So she likes a...
She was taking UCB classes.
Exactly.
She's a real underground comedy hipster. Yeah.
So like, I guess when you think about it that way, it kind of made sense that she would find my style amusing.
Yeah. And it's also so positive. I mean, it's, you love her so much, then that's obvious.
Oh, yeah.
It's, you know, if you're her, you're like, well, this is just heartwarming.
It was coming from a very real place. It was just sort of heightened to Billy on the Street mode. But, so then we go to Israel, but it's the opening night of her tour. She's nervous. And understandably, she was like, I can't do some comedy bit right now. So I end up talking to her dancers and other fans and stuff. And that was fine. And then when her tour got to Yankee Stadium in New York, her publicist said, okay, like, you know, now she's been touring for a few months. She's ready to do a thing with you. And so basically they said, you know, show up at Yankee Stadium with your crew. We'll get you backstage passes when she's rehearsing during the day on stage. And she doesn't want to script it out. And I said that to them. I said, we cannot script it out. The whole thing will die if it isn't its normal, spontaneous thing. And a lot of celebrities, especially if you're not a comedy person, you're scared of that. You don't want to improvise, right? Yeah. And so they said that they understood, that Madonna understood. And she said, they told me there's 2 points during the rehearsal, after this song and after this other song at the end, when you can run on with your crew and do your thing with her. And she's going to know that you're coming, but she won't know what you're going to say. And she will just respond accordingly. And so we did that. And it was truly the most surreal thing ever for me. Also, Billy on the Street had only been on a year at this point. I wasn't used to dealing with celebrities like this. And even if I had been, Madonna would have always been like the number one, can we get her type of person. So the fact that it was happening so early, it just was also strange. And then I'm face to face with Madonna and
genuinely starstruck, I'm sure. Like,
That was the biggest example ever of you have to somehow forget that you're starstruck because Billy on the Street would still yell at Madonna. That you can't all of a sudden sort of cower.
Billy on the Street is a sociopath, so he doesn't get nervous about
it. I think everyone needs some Billy in their blood system.
Yeah, I was like, you know, if you cower and just sort of fangirl out on her, A, I know Madonna enough to know that she's going to think that's lame.
Yeah.
And B, I was like, the only thing that's going to make this funny is if you continue to do your thing, that even Madonna isn't good enough. And that you're angry. Find a reason to be angry at her, too.
Right. Because she didn't do Vogue.
And so I ask her if she's going to perform Vogue that night, which she said she yells at me no, and she's not going to do Holiday. And I get really angry, start screaming at her. Anyway, it was totally wild.
So you actually met Madonna. Have you encountered her anytime since then?
Well, the other thing, for people who are interested in such things, so her publicist at the time, who has since retired, but her publicist who was her publicist for decades, going back to like 80s, Like a Virgin, Like a Prayer, like, you know, her name was Liz Rosenberg, a legendary publicist who also represented Cher and Stevie Nicks and, you know, all these icons, right? She was a character unto herself, Liz Rosenberg. I know so much about Madonna that I was almost more starstruck meeting Liz Rosenberg because I've been reading about her so many years. And I have other friends of mine, other gay friends of mine from my generation who also are obsessed with Madonna fans. And I remember like getting emails from Liz Rosenberg and being like, guys, I just got an email from Liz Rosenberg. And like all of us just like freaking out. Right? It was the best.
Rosenbergers, anyway, that's what you call Rosenberg fans.
I'm a Liz Rosenberg fangirl. I am. And so what I had said to Liz was, Liz said, she was like, you know, you'll do the screaming thing and you'll scream at her or whatever you're going to do. They didn't ask me, you know, they didn't tell me what to do. They knew vaguely what I was going to do. And then she said, I really want to get you in a one-on-one interview with her after the shouting part.
Yeah.
And I said, oh, okay. While we were shooting it, we did like the two bits where I kind of ambush her on stage. And then Liz was waiting around to see if Madonna would be up for the interview, the one-on-one. And it looked like she wasn't going to. And I was a little disappointed. And then I looked at Liz. I was like, Liz, we got to make this happen. and she did. And Madonna came like after she was done rehearsing the show, and we do like a one-on-one interview. And for all like the celebrities I've met and all the cool things I've gotten to do, this is still one of the highlights of my life, because Madonna is a really cool customer, you know, and she doesn't like to break.
Yeah.
Right. And she always wants to seem like she's in control, you know, And that's just part of her, like, I'm a strong woman persona, which of course I love. But I know underneath it, she has a sense of humor. Otherwise, she wouldn't let me even do this, right? And so I'm talking to her, and it's a pretty kind of cut and dry interview about her tour. And I'm like, I followed you all over. I went to the Super Bowl. I went to Israel, and now I'm here and all these things. And I told her that in Israel, I went to the Wailing Wall. And I told her that, because, you know, when people go to the Wailing Wall, they write down a little prayer to God and they stick it in the wall. And I said, I told her, I said, I wrote a little prayer to God. And she said, what did you write? And I said, that you would sing Vogue on your tour. And she cracked up laughing.
Oh, man. Like,
she couldn't, like, she couldn't keep a straight face as hard as she was trying to sort of not indulge me. And I got her. And that, to this day, is, like, one of the things I am most proud of.
I would
like,
have stopped the interview right there and walked away.
Yeah. It was amazing. And I have a screen grab of the moment that she laughs.
Yeah.
And it's, like, I literally have it framed. Oh, it's one of my favorite things.
Emmy Award-winning John Mulaney presents Everybody's in L.A., a special run of 6 live episodes created by and starring Mulaney that'll stream live on Netflix during the Netflix is a Joke Fest. The comically unconventional show will feature special guests where John Mulaney explores the city of Los Angeles during a week when every funny person is in it. Watch John Mulaney Presents Everybody's in L.A., debuting May 3rd live at 7 p.m. Pacific Time, only on Netflix.
Dunkin' cold coffee can be brewed at home in your Keurig coffee maker with Dunkin' cold K-Cup pods. Just brew it hot over ice and enjoy flavor that's crafted to serve cold. The home with Dunkin' is where you want to be.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match 2 of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's Mix and Match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network. So whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at a coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at tmobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at tmobile.com.
Well, so we'd be remiss if we did not talk about your remote where you led Conan through Grindr.
Oh, yeah.
Which was really fun. I was there for that one, actually. I don't know if you remember me being there, but it was so fun.
Also one of my favorite things I've ever done.
That
truly.
It was so, so funny because we had done a remote where he went on Tinder with Dave Franco. And then it was kind of like, I don't even remember how the idea came up for him to go on Grindr with you, Billy, but it was sort of just always assumed he was going to do it in a way. Like, I think it was such an obvious idea that everyone was just like, yeah, well, that's eventually. So I remember it being on the board, but it was like Grindr with Billy Eichner. Like, we were thinking about
that's
that.
That's so funny.
So
I was, everyone in my world thought I came up with the idea because it's Grindr and it's so gay focused. And, you know, again, like the Madonna clip, although the Grindr one even more. When was the Grindr?
2014?
2015. Okay, so numerically, that doesn't seem that like that long ago. But culturally, in terms of LGBTQ stuff, especially in mainstream pop culture, that is a world away from where we are now. I mean, there has been such an evolution. So everyone thought that was my idea. And I said, no, Conan's team came to me with
Conan's
the idea.
Yeah, no, I mean, I don't know if Conan knew about Grindr, but we did introduce him to it. Yeah.
And it was fantastic because in those days, I mean, even now you don't see a ton of crossover necessarily. There's a lot more visibility for like gay comedians and LGBTQ comedy and all of that. But you don't see as much crossover between the straight comedy world and the gay comedy world, like sometimes those are kept very separate unless we're sort of a member of an ensemble on a sitcom or something. But that was what was so amazing. It was like the coming of together of two worlds. And I always thought Conan was always so progressive in that way. And I always was really grateful for that, because with Conan, it was never about sexual orientation or anything. It was about comedy. That's all it was about. Like, is this worth doing for comedic purposes? And that's part of the reason I love that Grindr bit so much.
Yeah. And I mean, I think for Conan, even it's like Tinder is as alien to him as Grindr is, just because he's so far from being on a dating app in his current life. So I think that it was sort of just like you said, it was kind of sexually neutral, but he was just like an alien in this land.
You know what else I think it was?
Yes.
On Tinder,
it was so great.
It was kind of slow going, getting women interested in him.
Yeah.
And I think part of the joke was, you know, he got a reply finally from a woman, but she was 74 and even she kind of ended up blowing him off. So I think he genuinely was excited that things were happening faster on Grindr.
Yeah, there was a lot more action on Grindr.
You know,
yep, we moved.
Yeah,
we moved
and just that, yes. Like, you know, some people were ready to get it on with him. I think who doesn't get excited about that, regardless of gender?
Oh, it was so fun.
Yeah,
and we put photos of him on Grindr. Nothing X-rated, but I do think he took his shirt off. And then we did meet a man for him and then reveal. And the guy didn't believe that it was real, obviously, because he recognized Conan. I remember behind the scenes, because we wanted to go meet up with the guy that night.
Yeah.
You know, so I had to get on the phone with the guy and explain that this was real, that I was gay, that, you know, I put Conan on Grindr and that we were going to come together as a team to meet him and that it wasn't sketchy and we weren't trying to like catfish him or anything.
But
because there's multiple layers of like, but we also need you to be on camera. Right. So you have to agree to sign our consent form.
Yes. Right, exactly. Exactly. And I had a lot of experience with that as a Billy on the street.
And no pressure, just if you don't do this, we don't have an ending to this piece.
I said that. I was like, no one's having sex here. Right. Conan's not gay, but we would just like to come meet you and talk to you. And we did. We met him in the parking lot of a Bonds in Burbank.
We probably weren't the only Grindr meetup happening there. Who knows?
No. And Conan and I, you guys had this van that you rented for Conan and I to drive to meet the guy. And you had spray painted like portraits of Liza Minnelli and Cher and other gay icons like on the outside
of
the
van. That van already existed.
And Conan and I really did.
Oh, yeah. That was just Frank Smiley. That was just it's his personal van.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and I love that the guy you met up with, like, you're like, who's on the van? And he goes, well, that's Cher. But he didn't know Liza Minnelli.
He didn't know Liza.
And then he goes,
oh, my God, I forgot about
him.
He was young. Yeah. He said, I'm not that
kid. Hilarious.
He was young. That's why.
It was a generational
thing, look,
for sure.
I forgot that you gave him a heads up, but he still seemed shocked that, like, there's a TV camera there. I feel like when you first meet up with him.
Oh, yeah, and shocked that it was actually Conan.
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't believe someone if they were on a dating app saying it was a celebrity and they wanted to come meet. Of course I wouldn't believe that it was really Ben Affleck, for instance.
Right, and we literally met him on Grindr. Like, it wasn't set up in advance. Yeah. Grindr wasn't involved. Like, corporate Grindr didn't know.
No.
It was very organic and real. We went on Grindr. We made an account. We put up photos of Conan.
I always love commenters who are like, the whole thing's scripted. It's like,
No, we would have scripted it.
Oh, I know.
Better if we had scripted it.
All right. Well, thank you, Billy Eichner, for joining us.
Thank you, Billy. He's so funny.
Yeah, he's great.
Hey. Guess what? We're back with listener questions.
Oh, man.
I miss these.
It's the only reason we actually do this podcast.
It is.
Is for all those listener questions.
Otherwise, I don't get any emails.
Plus, once in a while, they compliment us.
I know.
And I need it because no one else in my life ever. I have to get it from strangers because anyone who knows me is like, yeah, sure.
You're yeah. Great. I think it matters more from strangers. Too,
oh, always.
They don't
yes.
know how much I need it.
The more yeah. superficial, the better with me.
It feels objective.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, here's a question. Dear Inside Conan podcast, I think everyone is familiar with the bit regarding Jordan on his role on Team Coco, but I'm curious, what does Jeff Ross, the executive producer, do on the show? Thanks. Moshi Moshi from Tokyo.
Three question marks after that question. So Toshi, or Moshi. I mean Moshi, Moshi, Moshi.
Moshi, Moshi.
Really wants to know. So
yeah, and honestly, so do I.
Yeah, so we're calling in the big guns to get to the bottom of this.
Yeah, we didn't feel capable of answering this question right. on our own.
The big gun.
Yeah,
David Hopping.
David Hopping is assistant to Jeff Ross and right. Conan O'Brien.
Yes.
So we'll next time we'll ask you what Conan does.
Yes.
Great. Yeah. No,
but for right
everybody
now,
everybody needs to know.
We're going to start with what Jeff Ross does.
Okay. I feel like anytime someone asks me what Jeff does, yeah. I just say he does it all.
He does it all.
There you go, Moshi.
I say deliciously vague. I feel like any final decision is made by Jeff, right?
Uh-huh.
Like,
uh-huh.
I mean, Conan always does the bit that he has a lot of dinner reservations, which I can confirm.
That Jeff, do you Jeff
make,
does.
You make those reservations.
I do, and they always know exactly who he is when
oh.
I call. It's great.
Because it's only two restaurants.
It's just
right. He knows how to do it. Yeah, I get they treat me well. You know, they know me there. It's pretty
do
good.
Do you ever make a reservation for Jeff Ross and then you take the reservation?
No, but you know what? Ever since I started assisting both of them, my like open table and my Resy account is all confused. Like Conan showed up at a restaurant once. They didn't have it. And then he called and he was like, you made it under Jeff Ross.
So now he knows just to go as Jeff
so
Ross.
So I always just say, you know what? If it's not Conan, it's Jeff.
Was he like, they gave me a better table as Jeff.
Can you imagine?
They were like, right this way, Mr. Ross.
Yes. The VIP section.
This Jeff Ross looks like that guy, Conan O'Brien.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I will say my favorite thing is whenever yes. I would get emails meant for the comedian, Jeff Ross.
Oh.
Jeff Ross.
Yeah.
And what kind of emails would those be?
Yeah.
Like, I remember once it was like some booking email, and I was like, Jeff, are you doing a
roast?
Comedy show?
Yeah, you know, I'll rake him over the coals.
He's just trying something new.
I wonder if Jeff Ross, the comedian, is getting, you know, reservations at, yeah.
Right. Oh.
So three guys are showing up at restaurants.
Spago.
As Jeff
yeah,
Ross.
I don't know where.
This is very confusing. And what's the comedian Jeff Ross do? Do you know that?
What is he?
No,
he does comedy.
That's right. There you go. Okay. You've got an answer for everything.
You know, you just keep it vague.
Yeah.
So Jeff is kind of like the buck stops here guy. Like,
yeah.
Like, he's got the final word on every business decision.
Everything. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, if you want a raise, go talk to Jeff.
Right.
Oh,
really?
I didn't know
shit.
That.
We should all should we call
that
him
that explains
now?
A yeah. lot.
I need to book some time with Jeff.
Yes. So
I got his calendar right here.
I've been talking to Jordan Schlansky about my raises for years and nothing's ever happened.
Oh, for years?
That's been a mistake.
Well, you have to manage their calendars.
I do.
Which
right.
seems difficult.
I've only messed up one time and I put one of Conan's podcast recordings in Jeff's calendar.
Uh-huh.
But everything was fine. Everything worked
yeah,
out.
That's not a bad.
Yeah.
That's a great episode
Jeff
of Jeff
him.
Ross. He's
it seems
great.
Like he'd want to know when Conan's recording a podcast anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now yeah. they're just in both. Then
so
that way,
even when you make a mistake, you're doing everything right.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
I'm really good at my job.
You know, we're really actually learning what David Hopping does.
Yeah, that's
yeah,
right.
Yeah, yeah,
we
yeah,
did incredible. Not answer the question.
Very
the buck
carefully
stops here with
it.
Jeff. I like that.
Yeah.
That's, yeah.
And I think that helps everyone know. Do you know what I mean? That mm-hmm. there's a grown-up somewhere in the building.
In the building.
Mm-hmm.
He's up in his...
Yeah, or at a restaurant. But either way, he's reachable.
Yeah.
And yeah.
I will say Jeff is the fastest texter if you text him.
Oh, really?
Responds instantly.
I will say... Oh,
no,
say
not... Jesse? I didn't have anything.
I'm very impressed by that as well. And mm-hmm. I think that is such a great habit
yeah.
to have. And I envy all those. I feel my... you know, calendaring a text for 10 days from now is also another great way to go.
I get a text and like I have to throw my phone across the room. Yes, it scares me when a text comes through.
Oh, I'm so happy to hear that.
Yeah.
I am terrified because it's like, and
what's this going to be?
Right.
Somebody wants me to do something.
And then people are being funny on a group text. I'm like, fuck.
Yeah, no,
fuck. And
no,
then I have to go workshop some lines and what font, you know, should I pick a funnier font or. But and it's like that throws me.
It's a lot of pressure.
And then I go to I have
but maybe
to take
that's
to
the
my
writer's
bed.
Brain. And you know, if you're an executive, you have an executive producer brain. You just fire it off.
Or maybe it's a low self esteem brain. Maybe that's,
maybe that's it.
I think that's what it is.
I don't think Jeff has low self esteem.
No.
Yeah,
he has. Great
he just
self-esteem.
Fires right back.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but yeah, I don't think he worries about typos or anything. Like I worry about. Oh my God, it's a proper. I need to
or
put
like,
it.
Do
in
I need
quotes.
To add a smiley face so the person knows I'm.
Right.
Being fun.
Or I'm referencing a title with the word the in the middle. Oh, that's lowercase, not capital. Like,
oh, sure.
I've got to Google that and double check. Is into also capitalized, you know? Oh. So, right?
Yeah. There's a lot to it.
Because these texts are going to live on.
Right. Especially if it's the last one you
during
sent.
During the lawsuit.
Before you died in a car accident.
God.
Oh.
That'll be happy.
We both had a different dark fear. Yours are that your text. No, but sometimes I do think about that when texts are read and are subpoenaed and then read in court.
Oh, yes.
That's terrifying to me.
No, there used to be writer's group emails where I'm like, I'm not getting
weighing
into
it
this
on
one.
This.
Because, you know, it's all everything's coming out eventually.
Even if you delete it, it's still there.
Oh, it's still there.
Somewhere. Yeah.
Actually, the lawyers are here to.
As your job, David, is there anything that's like off limits for you where you're like, oh, I'm not going to pick up your dry cleaning? Or would you have to do something like that if you were asked?
I pretty much just say yes to
you.
Yeah, say yes.
I knew the answer to that one.
Mm-hmm.
Nice of you to ask, Jesse. But I believe the answer is I'll get it right away. I was wrong.
Do you, what are Conan and Jeff's coffee orders?
Conan's is just a black coffee with almond milk on the side.
Okay.
Jeff usually doesn't do coffee, but for a while he was always getting these like triple shot like espresso drinks.
Oh, that's a lot of coffee.
And he would do it like before a meeting and it would really get him fired up.
Oh. Sell.
Uh-huh. This is good.
Coffee's for closers.
Mm-hmm. But he said he used to. He doesn't now. He hasn't done it
in a while. Yeah.
He's like,
I always knew it was going to be.
Now he's just into water. He's got that big jug of water.
Hydrating. Yeah.
Hydrating.
Uh-huh.
They have the both one with the drinking lines. Water constantly.
Yeah.
And just peeing constantly.
So much water, so much liquid.
I know.
And almonds. Water and almonds.
Water and almonds. That the Jeff Ross diet?
That is his diet. if you want to get to the top and have the buck stop with you, almonds and water.
Mm-hmm. Unless you're allergic, then don't do that. But
well, that's a great caveat. Thank you,
yes,
David. If you're allergic to water, don't drink water.
I have so many follow-up questions.
Is that an allergy? People being...
Probably.
Yeah.
People are allergic to everything these days.
Wait, what's that, David?
He nodded his head when you said something.
Yeah.
My cousin's girlfriend is allergic to water.
To water? Yeah. Oh, my God.
Wait, that's Sean.
It really does sound like a lie.
You can drink it, but you can't touch it.
What?
You get like hives. You have to take a medication.
I think she's doing that to get out of family vacations.
Yes. She's doing that to get out of living. I mean, like, what could she do?
I can't go outside. What about rain?
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask.
Yeah.
And because there's also the issue with sweat. She can't, like, work out.
Wait.
I am going to ask all this to be cut.
She's allergic to her own sweat?
Yes. Yeah, she can't exercise because the sweat makes her break out in hives.
I think I might have this allergy, too.
Yeah, I'm suddenly coming down with an allergy.
And who is this? She's married to
Cousin's girlfriend.
Your cousin's girlfriend. Oh, this is one of those urban legends.
No, I had dinner with her last month.
My cousin's girlfriend, she's allergic to water.
We've all got a cousin's girlfriend.
Oh,
somewhere.
Air and water. That's the worst one.
Oh, no.
Mm-hmm. She's allergic to hydrogen coupled with oxygen or alone.
Well, you know what I'm not allergic to? You, David Hopper.
David, we can't get enough.
You're delightful.
Yes. I think we're going to have you on as
I think you'll be
all
back.
The time with some more. But we need to dig deeper into.
We need more questions about David and what
he does. Yeah. I'll write some. I just want to probe into the darker. You must have. We'll get into it.
Well, yeah, you can send us questions. Please do. We really do love
it. You do these great segues to sum things up, and then I just go off like I'm like a fucking truck that's dumping stuff off the back.
You think I'm just doing this at random?
Yes, go ahead, Jesse.
Please send us your questions. You can email us if you're scared of talking on the phone like we are.
Yes.
InsideConanPod@gmail.com. Or if you're more of a Jeff Ross type, you can call us. Leave a voicemail at 323-209-1079.
Beautifully done. The buck stops with you.
Buck stops here.
It should.
Oh, and if you like the show, you can support us by rating Inside Conan, an important Hollywood podcast on iTunes, and leaving us a review.
It seems like a lot of homework we're giving viewers. I'm not pressuring. This is all coming from Jesse. You listening's enough for me.
Yes. And send us, do 10 push-ups and.
There you go.
Send us.
And in return, well, we love you.
Yeah, we love you. Inside Conan, an important Hollywood podcast, is hosted by Mike Sweeney and me, Jesse Gaskell. You can rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts.
And of course, please subscribe and tell a friend to listen to Inside Conan on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, or whatever platform you like best.
It's the Conan Show. Put on your hat. It's the Conan Show. Try on some spats. You're going to have a laugh. Give birth to a calf. It's Conan.
This has been a Team Coco production.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at a coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.